Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery. Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, I'm Megan Segura.
And I'm Eric J. Mack.
And this is The Daily Dish, Bravo's official podcast.
Okay, we had such a fun time last week talking with Kate Chastain. Did you guys love that? Because Megan and I love that.
I love Kate.
She had so much to say, so much wisdom to pass along, and like the behind the scenes tidbits and just her observations about Hannah and Bugsy. I spent a lot of this week's episode paying attention to Hannah and when she was playing with her necklace and just trying to notice those things that she pointed out to us.
I was going to say that I feel like I spent a lot more time noticing the outfits based on Kate had said. So I have some notes about that.
Oh, I have lots of notes about Bugsy's outfit.
Me too!
Okay, so what are we talking today?
Well, we need to talk about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills because it's finally back and I've missed them. And then Real Housewives of New York City because they're in the Berkshires. And then we have interviews with Married to Medicine LA's Dr. Britton Cole and Leah Diaz.
Plus, the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills after show premiered this week. So check that out on BravoTV.com. Okay, let's do Beverly Hills first.
Okay.
Where do we begin? I'm so happy they're back. I couldn't remember where we left off, and then this episode started, and I was like, oh, that's right.
Oh, yes, exactly. Where we're at Kyle's family barbecue sans Denise's family. By the way, I was so PMS-y when I was watching all the episodes this week, and I feel like my notes are really fired up. Like, I'm just, I have a lot of anger towards people.
Oh, my God, I can't wait.
Okay, to begin with, since we're back at the barbecue, Aaron is just being such a dick, I feel like, to all the ladies. What do you think the husband should get involved? It's an age-old question, and I like to ask it every once and again to see, to get a temperature check.
Well, Aaron was undoubtedly ready to pounce on those ladies. And I feel like we've seen Denise bring him around now a couple times, almost as her, I don't want to say bodyguard, but as someone...
Henchman!
Yeah, I mean, essentially. I don't really think that the husbands should get involved. And I feel like there's an unspoken agreement among the men on these shows where they're just kind of like, let's let the ladies do it, whether it's a dinner or a group event or whatever it may be. And this is across the shows too. We see it on Married to Medicine LA. The husbands just often sit back and let the ladies do it. So I understand naturally reacting in a way where you want to defend your partner if you feel like they're being attacked. But Denise should be able to stand up on her own two feet against these women. And Edwin was at this party and wasn't coming over to check in on how Teddy was doing. He was like, I'm going to play with the kids and do my own thing. So I feel like Aaron was a little out of line, but I understand why he felt compelled to defend her.
Well, I decided to make my own little list of like the most offensive husbands in terms of getting involved in fights. And all but one are from Beverly Hills.
Okay.
So I feel like Ken, Lisa Vanderpump's husband, is the most offensive. He always—
You're not her friend.
But like he's called all the women like such nasty names. And remember that one season he grabbed Yolanda's arm and she was like, don't ever touch me. I just feel like he always inserts himself when he should just sit back. Simon from Real Housewives of New York was always just way too happy to get involved in the drama.
Oh, he loved the camera.
And I feel like PK's first season on the show was pretty offensive in terms of like, for well, first and second, he just got too involved in like the Erica stuff. And now I feel like he knows to take a back seat. Aaron has not learned that lesson. But I so agreed with Erica where she was like, if my husband ever talked to my girlfriends like that, he'd get cussed out in the car. I feel like the unspoken reason was kind of spoken later in the episode when they were at Sutton's trunk show, where Erica is like, what, are you going to take a swing at me? Because there's just something about an angry guy's tone toward a woman. Like, you just don't know. You just, it's like this very intimidating feeling that doesn't really come out. I don't know. I don't know how to explain it.
I know exactly what you mean. And there's one thing to be like, angry and loud, but the sort of quiet anger that Aaron shows, that he displays, where he's like, no, I'm calm. Are you calm? Like, that is almost, there's like a manipulation there where it's almost like gaslighting, like tricking you into thinking that, you know, you're the one upset. I'm not upset. What are you so upset about? And I think Erica does, she sees right through bullshit, and she will call it out. And there was no way she was going to let Aaron get away with the way he spoke to everyone, because she was offended by it. As I think they should be. Looking back on it now, I can really see where Erica and the other ladies are coming from in this instance. Like, he did not need to get involved.
Yeah. I feel like my one exception to this rule, and it's a real life exception, has to do with you and Danny's relationship, where like sometimes you'll tell me stories and it's just like, I think you two are so protective of each other, where it's just like, what did you say? What?
Right. Yeah, there have been several instances, some involving housewives, where Danny has had to. We won't say who, but some, you know, where Danny has very quickly come to my defense in a situation where it is appropriate, you know, and there is a time and a place, a family barbecue at like 1:30 in the afternoon when everyone's like sitting on the floor having a good time. Maybe not the right time, Aaron.
Right. Oh my God. It is my favorite thing about Danny, I think, though, because he is like the sweetest person. And then it's just so funny how like if something comes near you, he turns so quick.
Yeah, we gays can flip on a switch. Okay,
turn on a dime.
Totally. Oh my God.
Also, twice in this episode, we got Aaron like saying to Denise, like, don't squish my hand. Like,
okay, don't squish my hand.
Yeah, what the hell is wrong with his hands that he's so concerned? Like, he's telling her, he's like, doesn't want her to squish his hand. He's like going to squeeze her hand. I'm like, maybe you guys shouldn't hold hands when there's like high emotions.
It's so true. Like, hand holding's supposed to be sweet. Like, I don't know if you guys got the memo.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole thing is turning out to be a lot more than I expected from Aaron.
Oh my God, I just saw your note about Rena doing character work.
What was the hardest part of the show? Do you remember?
You're going to have a monologue. You are on stage alone.
By yourself.
That was challenging for me. And that is probably my greatest moment. When you talk about fame, you're going to relate to it.
Oh my God. I mean, there are so many things to talk about this week that I didn't give it my rose, but I absolutely loved it. It was a perfect Housewives moment, especially Beverly Hills, because we do have so many actresses on the show. So Rinna doing this butt sculpt while doing character work with Erica about Roxy in Chicago. I mean, it was just like a perfect moment between like two of my favorite ladies on this show. But I was also very curious about this sculpting experience that they were going through, because they didn't really explain the technology behind it. And not that I'm out here doing all of these different procedures myself, but I was like, are these like electric shocks that they're getting? Like, what is happening to their body that first of all seems very stimulating, and second of all actually has really good results?
I think it's best not to ask those sort of probing questions. You know, you just go and you do it and you don't really worry about how it's happening.
Right. Well, that's, you know, we are all getting of a certain age where I have started to think of, oh, maybe I would get some Botox in a few years and start doing some like little touches here and there. But it is so part of their lives to just go and get something plumped or filled or, you know, tucked or whatever. It's just so funny that is so much a part of not just Beverly Hills culture, but kind of housewives culture at large. Like, they don't think twice about going into these new age procedure things where they're like, I don't know, let's see what happens. Like, I would have to really think about something like that.
Would you though, if it were free? Because you know people are just reaching out to them like, hey, please come into my spa, get whatever you want.
Yeah, that makes me even more nervous if it's free. I'm like, how many people are you tested with that?
I'd be like, fill her up.
I mean, my time will come. And I have friends and like I've talked to people, whatever, my time will come. But I just, you know, maybe I would say yes to more opportunities if they did just like end up in my email or, you know, text message, whatever. But I don't know.
Okay. By the way, I was watching an episode of My Strange Addiction.
Oh boy.
And one of the women, her strange addiction was getting butt injections, which you're like, oh, okay. You know, like whatever. They're like not from a doctor. It's not at a spa. Uh-oh. It's some woman who asks her to meet at a shady hotel room, and she just has a bowl of liquid that she's injecting her from.
What? What is the liquid?
Exactly. Why would you take that risk?
See, this is where it really crosses the line into addiction territory, because that sounds like a drug deal. Like, you meet at a shady hotel.
Sure.
You know, like, it's a different location.
It is true.
I don't know.
It's like when you're freebasing, you're not asking where the drugs are coming from, you know. Were you so happy that we got to see Kim Richards this episode?
Oh, of course I was. I was so thrilled. I mean, I love her so much and I grow to love her more every time I see her. But yeah, this was really great. I didn't realize we would get thrown right into this whole like surgical procedure that she's going through to fix.
You got to see a lot of Kim.
Yeah, I mean, we just got thrown right into it. But, you know, I was surprised to hear that she was single again, because last I knew, and this was probably not from last season, but maybe the season before, that Kim had had a secret boyfriend for like 6 years or something. And nobody really knew about it, and it wasn't really talked about. But to find out that she's single again, you know, it made me sad, because I have been going back and watching older seasons of Beverly Hills and just watching everything she went through with like her Ken, who was like not that good to her, but she just kept
not
crying.
Cute.
Oh God, he was not. What did Brandy call him? A gay bulldog? Like, like, I was just like, this is like, Kim can do way better than this guy. But just like the time she was crying to Kyle, like, I'm so sad and I'm so lonely. Like, I just want to like be with someone, you know? So I'm always rooting for her in every aspect of her life, but particularly in her love life, because I do think she has a lot to offer. And it's just like, I feel bad, but she seems to be okay that she's single at the moment. I mean, we didn't really get to dive into that as much because we were talking more about her poor deflated breast. Did you see that? You could see part of it in one of the shots where it was like caved in on the side. I was like, damn.
Well, it's funny how she described it as it looks like someone took a bite out of it, because it's right. Like, it is true, like that little like puckering that happens on the side. But I have heard, because, you know, I've often gone back and forth if I should get, you know, a boob job. And
yes,
it sounds like it's a lot of upkeep. Like, it's not just once. You got to rotate the tires, basically.
Well, and also, I'm sure nowadays they might have better science and everything behind it. I mean, when Kim was talking about getting her first implants 30 years ago, I mean, that's a long time ago. So I'm sure advances have been made at this point, and it might be better now to do it, and you wouldn't have to necessarily have as much upkeep, but you never know. I mean, it's just like,
so you're saying I should do it?
I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't, but
so if I came back from this quarantine time to work and I had, let's say, like a really like a tasteful D cup,
okay,
would you say anything?
I would 100% say something. I would hope that maybe you would also like check in with me or Crystal beforehand. Like, you know, if you could just like show us the sizes you were thinking about, we could provide.
I showed
feedback.
You the photo of Kylie Jenner. That was me. That was me, you know, getting your.
Right, right. Your, yeah, thing. That might be a little much, but like, you know, I don't know. Whatever makes you happy, Megan.
Thank you.
Wait, there is something else that is crucial that we need to speak of from this episode.
Okay.
I want to know more about Antonio.
When I was finishing university, I met an Italian guy. He offered me a job in Italy. And I thought, this is great. I'll spend 6 months or a year. I'll learn Italian. Questo è bello.
Ti piace?
Molto. Sì, mi piace anche il colore.
Sì, è bellissimo.
And then almost 10 years later, and a broken engagement, I returned to Manhattan. Where PK and I first met.
Antonio. I mean, what?
I know. Oh my God. It just came up today that like we might get to interview her soon. I have to ask her all the questions about that.
Absolutely. And so we are, just for the listeners to know, we are recording this before the episode airs on Wednesday, but I am hoping that somebody does the work for me and tracks this Antonio down on social media and identifies him, because you know, as soon as this kind of information comes out, there are internet detectives that will figure it out immediately. So if it doesn't happen by the time this episode comes out on Saturday, I need somebody to help me with this detective work and we need to figure out who this guy is.
Also, like, why did the engagement not work out? Also, is PK jealous because she was like, I can't say his name too loudly. Like, PK will hear me.
I know. Well, there's some significant history there. If she was with him for, you know, around 10 years, I think she said, and then there was an engagement that was called off. I mean, she speaks Italian. It's one of the many languages she speaks, as we know. So I really would love to unpack more of that. So yeah, definitely. If we get her for an interview, you got to ask those questions.
100p.
Last thought, there is no way I would let Sammy drive on the PCH in that truck when she cannot even identify the gas pedal versus the brake.
The hot dog and the
I have never heard that.
So hamburger, brake, hot dog, go.
Ever in my whole life.
No, I've heard when you go skiing, in order to control the skis, you do pizza to slow down and french fries to speed up. Like, I've heard of that.
Well, I've never heard french fries. Definitely pizza, though.
Yeah, pizza, french fries. That's how you know, like, to control the speed and, like, slow down and everything. But yeah, the hot dog hamburger was, I don't remember that being part of my lessons when I was 15.
Also, I thought it was so funny that Charlie Sheen lasted, like, one lesson and then was like, I'm done. I can't teach her to drive. My dad tried to teach me stick once and never again.
Oh.
Never again.
That's very hard. I did learn to drive on a bigger vehicle, like the one that Sammy was driving. It was like a Mitsubishi Montero. And then I ended up with smaller cars once I got my own vehicles. And I did learn stick shift, actually. And it is very difficult because once you learn how to drive, you're like, oh, I'm good. And then they throw this stick shift at you and you're like, I don't need all of this. Like, I'll just get a car that doesn't have it. But I happen to get a car that was stick shift.
But you know how they always say, like, name something that's not sexual that's a turn on. I definitely think a guy who can drive stick.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's something about Fast and the Furious, Paul Walker, like definitely there's something.
Yeah, I want a guy who can drift.
Tokyo Drift specifically. Yeah, no, there is definitely, I definitely felt way cooler driving stick shift. But I also went to school in upstate New York in Ithaca, where there are way too many hills. And it was kind of scary sometimes. You would get stuck on a hill, even like Los Angeles. I didn't have a stick shift when I lived there, but there are so many hills there that you're just like, this is not safe for a stick shift.
So I got the chance to interview Dr. Britton Cole from Married to Medicine Los Angeles. I wanted to get her feedback on Dr. Kendra talking about taking this new job, how she felt Imani was handling the divorce, and if it's given her a wake-up call for her own marriage. Here's that interview. Thank you for hopping on this call with us, Dr. Britton. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
How has life in self-isolation been?
You know, it's actually not been too bad because it hasn't really changed too much for me since I am considered an essential worker. I go to work every day. I haven't stopped. I just have kept going. The only difference is because we as a family can't do anything. We're confined to the home, which is kind of nice. I don't have to run around like a chicken with his head cut off to take these kids all around the city to be entertained. They can just stay home and entertain themselves. So that's kind of nice.
Are you guys driving each other crazy?
The kids are driving each other crazy. They're driving my husband crazy. I get home in the evenings and I'm okay. Because I don't have to deal with it all day long. So I'm not too bad off.
Yeah. I have to wonder, what is the mood like in the hospitals right now? Is it sort of the same as before? Do you feel it's different?
Oh, it's different now. I think when the crisis first started, everyone was extremely nervous. It was very chaotic. And we really didn't have a good sense of what we should be doing as practitioners because it was all so new. So you know, day to day, what we were supposed to be doing, what we were supposed to be wearing, it changed because, you know, every day there was something new that came out. There was some, you know, breakthrough in this or discovery of that, or we figured out from China this. So in the beginning, it was very chaotic because we just didn't know what to do and how to handle things. And now it's kind of like a calm. I think we are pretty used to everything now. We know what to do, what to expect, what to dress for, how to dress for it, you know, what to expect from patients when they come in. So it's a lot more relaxed in the sense that we aren't caught off guard anymore. I think now because we can anticipate things, we know what to do and how to handle it. It's much more calm now.
Is this similar to anything you've experienced before in your medical career?
Actually, for me, no. I mean, we've never had any global medical crisis that I've ever been a part of. I mean, I can remember, you know, when HIV hit, I was still a child, but I remember when I entered into medicine, just me personally feeling like, okay, that's one, you know, pandemic, so to speak, that's affected the entire world and, you know, infectious wise. And we still don't have a cure or we still don't have a vaccine for. And so, you know, when I entered into the medical field, I had to really pay attention to needle sticks, wearing gloves. And, you know, you have to be really, really cautious about things. So in terms of like a nationwide pandemic, a global pandemic, I've never really experienced anything like this before. But, you know, the closest I can come to is maybe like the HIV crisis when it first hit, when I came into medicine, which was, you know, late 90s, early 2000s. But it's still, it's nothing like COVID for sure.
Right. What's been the most difficult part of working during this time?
You know, I think the most difficult part is explaining to patients, you know, what to expect or how to stay safe or how not to catch the disease. Because, you know, all we know is wash your hands and stay inside. But is that a realistic request, right? So as practitioners, we really don't have good concrete answers because there's no research behind it. You know, nothing's really been studied for any length of time to really know, you know, what to expect next or what we can do or how we can live our regular lives and still protect ourselves. So because we don't have a grasp on that, it's just really hard to kind of relay any real information that patients really want to hear. I mean, no one wants to hear, stay in the house and wash your hands. You know what I mean? Like people want to hear, oh, it's okay to go out. It's okay to enjoy life, but do X, Y, and Z and you'll be fine. Well, we don't have a good X, Y, and Z. So, you know, I think that's kind of hard to really not have a clear understanding of this disease, but, you know, eventually we will, but right now it's just, you know, it's still kind of vague.
Well, I think the question that's really on all of our minds, are the kids still sleeping in your bed?
Ah! No, they are not.
What? You know,
they are not. It's funny. I'm telling you, one thing reality TV will do is they make you face things that you wouldn't ordinarily face in real life. Like they'll put the problem in front of you and say, okay, now what are you going to do? You can't run from it. We're all watching you. What are you going to do about it? So I have to respect reality TV for that because, you know, before, yeah, I mean, they slept in the bed with us. I kind of, you know, ignored everything. Mac was just kind of like going through the motions, like, all right, whatever. But because the show really made us focus on it and pay attention to it, you know, we had to solve the problem. There was a problem. It was an elephant in the room. And we just kind of like, no, I was like, just let my baby stay. And because of the show, no, they're not in the bed with us anymore because we really had to face facts, or I did actually, that, you know, this was something that was propagated by me and it continued because of me. And I really needed to, you know, nip it in the bud. And so, yeah, thanks to the show, I actually did.
Was it harder on you or the kids?
It was probably harder on me. I mean, I don't think the kids, they really don't care. You know what I mean? Like in 2 minutes, they're on to the next thing, right? You show them something shiny and they've totally forgotten about the last thing they were talking about. So I think it was probably harder for me because I'm the one that doesn't really want to let go. But the kids are always evolving and changing and growing. And so even when I ask them to sleep with me, like if Mac is out of town, they're like, nah, we're good. I'm like, really? No.
Does it make you less hesitant to share personal things about your life, not only with the other ladies, but with the cameras?
I don't think, no, not really. It doesn't make me less hesitant. I mean, it's kind of therapeutic in some ways. But I think, you know, talking about things that are going on in my life, I only imagine that it's going on in someone else's life too. I mean, I don't think that I'm so special that my one problem is just mine and mine alone. So I feel like if nothing else, if I talk about things, one is therapeutic, but two, I think people can, you know, relate to it and maybe find some solutions for themselves. I mean, so for me, I don't have a problem with discussing things. Yeah, I don't have a problem with it.
Well, before Imani told you, you know, what was happening with her and Phil, were you aware that she was having struggles? Like, was it something you guys were talking about off camera?
You know, Imani and I did have a couple conversations. And I think even in the storyline, I think I did tell people that, yeah, I knew a little something before everyone else knew. And that's because, you know, Imani and I, we share things on and off camera. And so, you know, and there's a certain level of privacy and secrecy that friends have, and you have to respect that. And so that is, you know, what I did. I had to respect, you know, her wishes and when she felt like she was comfortable talking to people about it or telling the public about it. You know what I mean? Like, that's not for me to discuss. But yeah, we did have a couple conversations about things.
Yeah. When you first heard about the fact that he was, you know, traveling to Oklahoma so much, did you assume that things were going south?
No, that was not my assumption at first, because I am in a household where between me and my husband, we travel for work, or we have. So for me, it was kind of normal. I didn't think anything of it. But, you know, as the story unfolded and it was like, well, he doesn't come to visit or she doesn't go visit him, then I was a little bit, you know, kind of curious as to what exactly is going on, because that I didn't find very normal. And, you know, we had discussions about that as well, on and off camera.
I think sometimes, you know, divorce, it almost feels contagious. And when you hear that, like, another couple is getting divorced, it sort of jolts you in your own relationship. Yeah. Did you and Mac experience that at all?
It's funny you say that, because Mac says that about me all the time. He's like, you always, whenever your friends go through something, you internalize that into our relationship.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think, and not even divorce, I think a lot of our girlfriends' problems, we do kind of superimpose into our own relationships because we don't want to be there. So we start asking the questions and bringing shit up with our husbands and our boyfriends or whoever it is. And it starts to stir the pot a little bit, not because we want to go in that direction, but it's the opposite. We don't want to. So I think you're right. I think sometimes when you hear divorce, it does stir the pot. It makes you think, okay, you know, what are we doing? Are we going down that road? Are we headed for divorce ourselves? What are we doing that's wrong? Can we be better people? Can we be better toward each other? So I think those things start to kick into gear, and sometimes it can create a little bit of a problem before it gets resolved. But I think that's the point of it. You know, when you hear things like divorce, whatever problem it is that's going on in your friends' relationships, you know, you bring it up in your own relationship because you want to make sure everything is okay, and you have to stir the pot to make sure everything is going well. And, you know, I think sometimes that, you know, it can go south, or it can go in the right direction. But I think I definitely did internalize some of her issues into my own relationship and kind of ask the questions like, where are we? How can we be better?
I think if you keep up those sexy date nights and those outfits, you'll be all good.
Oh my goodness. I'm so embarrassed. Every time I watch it, I'm like, no.
Tell us in detail what happened after the cameras left.
Oh, please. You know I'm not doing that. You can enjoy the rest of the night baby free, okay?
Yeah. How was the Palm Springs trip? Do you feel like it helped bring the group closer?
Oh, God, yes. I mean, you know, I don't know what you're going to see, but having lived through it, we had a ball. And it wasn't just all fun. Like, we talked and we cried and we went through, I mean, every emotion you can possibly think of is what happened in Palm Springs. And I think what's funny is when you get a group of women together, and I've had this happen to me probably since elementary school. You get a group of girls together, women together, it's the same thing repeated since grade school. It's like you talk about everything and you bond, things make you cry. You talk about how you feel about each other, about how outside relationships are going. I mean, you really do. It's something about having a sleepover. I don't know what it is that women, what it is we do with these sleepovers, but we have this power, this way of connecting with one another when we have sleepovers and when we talk to each other. And, you know, you mix that with a little bit of wine and shit, and you're bound to get all types of craziness. So yeah, it was a really good time, and it really did bring us closer for sure.
Yeah. And I loved that, you know, like, it also came up about Kendra, not like her going back to work full time, not telling Hobart about her interview. And it was funny because even my co-host and I feel like we had different opinions, because he was like, well, it makes sense that Hobart would be concerned, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, no, what? She loves what she does. You know, like, it's
yeah, it's, you know what?
Their reality for women, I feel.
Well, you know what? That issue is very polarizing because even she and I don't agree with it. I still felt like she was wrong. And, you know, a lot of women are like, how could you say that, Britton? She worked so hard to become a doctor. You know, that's who she is. And I'm like, yeah, but you entered into a marriage. And when you are married, there is no I. You don't just go off on an interview. You don't just make any decision without consulting your partner. That's just, you just don't do it. And I don't care what the issue is. I don't care if it was you going back to work. I don't care. You know, it could be you deciding to take a vacation. Whatever it is, you start down that road where you're making solitary decisions, then what's next? You know, and I think that that was part of it for Hobart. At least that's kind of what I thought. It's like, well, if you're making the decision to go off on an interview after we had a discussion that I don't even want you to work, what else are you going to do behind my back? What other decisions are you going to make without talking to me first? That was why I had a problem with it. It wasn't so much that, you know, this is her livelihood and she worked so hard for it, women's lib and all that stuff. I didn't care about any of that. It was the decision part. Yeah. Making decisions without your spouse to me is just a bad thing to start off doing. And so that's why I was in total disagreement of what she did.
This is what's so great about reality TV, though, is we get so invested, like even me, someone who does not know Kendra, and yeah. Like I have very strong opinions about what she is doing in her marriage. Like I love that.
Yeah, and a lot of people agree with her, and people disagree with me. Obviously, she disagrees with me, and I was like, "Well, that's just what I think. I don't know what do I know? I'm just a married woman."
Well, when is the last time you saw Dr. Contessa?
Oof. Well, that would have been since COVID. Ooh, it's been since maybe last year.
Okay. Yeah, last How's your year. Friendship today? I mean, are you still?
Oh, no, we're still besties. Yeah, nothing has changed in terms of how we feel or how we talk and, you know, what we do. But I mean, I just, because the holidays hit after she left and then COVID was right after that, we haven't seen each other. But we talk on the phone all the time. So yeah, that's still the same.
Perfect. Well, good. I'm glad. I so appreciate you hopping on this call with us and with the listeners and giving us an update on everything. The show has been just so good this season.
I think the show was excellent this season. I think it's fun. It's funny. It's serious. It's heartwarming. It's emotional. It's a lot. It's everything. It's women, you know, it's how we live.
Thank you so much.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
New York?
Yes, please.
Oh, the Berkshires. How we've missed thee.
Oh, absolutely.
I wanted to start, though, with Dorinda cold calling all of her friends to invite them to the Berkshires. I'm a loser! It's official!
Please record your message.
Because I just find it so funny that nowadays it's really like it's rude almost to just call someone without pre-scheduling it. Like you and I have only talked on the phone maybe two or three times and it's always been hey, can I call you?
Right. Because I would assume something was wrong if you started to call me out of nowhere. Like I would be like, oh my God, she needs me. Something's happened, you know? Well, the thing about it that's funny with filming is that one might assume that the recipients of the phone call would be flagged like, hey, I'm filming right now. I'm going to need you to answer because otherwise they're just going to film me here lying in my bed making phone calls to people who won't answer. But it's crazy to think she went through all of those ladies.
I was really unsure about Elise, but I respect how hard she goes in on Ramona.
Yeah, I think we've gone back and forth on her so much this season, and it's been hard to really pinpoint, like, do I like her? Do I dislike her? Like, I'm not sure which. But I feel like after this episode, she's grown on me a lot more. And there has been more drama unfolding on Twitter in recent weeks.
What? You have to tell me.
Yeah, so I went back and I took a couple screenshots. So this was as of today, 5 days ago, and she tweeted a picture that said, when your so-called friend, in quotes, invites you on Real Housewives of New York City, and it's a picture of Snow White accepting the apple from the scary witch. So...
Oh my God, she's clever too.
Right, and someone, a fan, actually recreated the picture, the image, and made, you know, Elise's face on Snow White and Ramona's face on the witch. It's really funny, so check out her Twitter if you want to see it. It made me laugh. So, I mean, I'm kind of like, all right, well, at least Elise is leaning into the drama outside of what's happening on air, because nowadays it is so much does unfold on social media outside of the show.
I know. That's why I rely on you so heavily to tell me like what's been happening.
Well, I got you. Don't you worry.
I just feel constantly enraged by Ramona because I feel like she's such a slippery little eel. Like no one can just hold on to her tightly enough to say, this is why you're a terrible person sometimes. Like she just is always able to get out of it. And I just think that she's never, ever actually sorry for anything that she's said or done on the show.
Well, it's interesting too, because I think Dorinda does often set Ramona up to get into these situations where someone will confront her. And I think Dorinda likes watching her try to slip and slide out of the responsibility or taking ownership or apologizing, you know? And I think that's a part of, you know, Dorinda likes to instigate, but Ramona makes it so easy, you know?
Yeah. But it's just like when Ramona's like, okay, Elise, I need you to lower your voice because it's just like, it's just that's what my father used to do. He used to yell at me and then I shut down. And it's just like,
well, she can be pissed, but lower your voice a little. Then I'd rather, like, I don't need to do this.
Because she runs when you scream.
If you want to do that, yeah, I do. So if you, because that's what my father used to do. Right. If you want to have a conversation, let's go here.
Like Leah says in the episode, there's a lot of gaslighting that Ramona pulls. And I think oftentimes people that Ramona gets into fights with are a bit smarter than Ramona is. Like, I think Elise is a really intelligent person. And I think she sees right through Ramona's BS, but it's very difficult to have a rational, reasonable, straightforward argument with Ramona because she does say things like that. And it comes out of kind of nowhere and it throws you off in the moment. And you're just sort of like, oh God, what are we talking about now? You know? And like, she tried to go into the different rooms to like sit her down, but it just goes in circles. Like you said, it's she never really takes responsibility and it just keeps happening and happening and happening.
And I think we really need to talk about the subtext of the argument between Elise and Ramona, because I feel like what it is that Ramona said to Elise, I'm going to get you on the show. But then Ramona's like, well, you know, I got you this far. Mm-hmm. It's up to you to like,
yes,
do the rest.
Well, right. And it's interesting because we saw, not necessarily with Ramona, but a little bit of the same thing last season with Barbara Kay, right? Like,
yes,
a friend of comes in, like a person comes in, a new face comes on the show, and then there's all of this pressure for them to, you know, deliver or fight back or do this or do that, or a sense of, you should be grateful that we let you here onto this show with all of us. We saw that a little bit, you know, we've seen it with Tinsley over the years, the way that they kind of always treated her as like the kid sister. There was a little bit of, you know, bumpy start with Leah in the beginning, but I think Leah has fully integrated to a point where she feels very naturally a part of the cast. But for some reason, yeah, I think Ramona is holding this over Elise. Like, I got you on this show, so you should be grateful to me. And I don't like that angle. Like, that's not really a good friend. And I think that's what Elise keeps bringing up. Like, I thought we were really friends. I thought we were really friends. And we've seen in flashbacks, like, Elise has been around this group for a really long time. We see a flashback from like 2017 in this episode, and Elise is there. So it's not like she's new to the group. It's just that she's new to the show. And I think Ramona maybe is like a little worried about that.
Yeah, agreed.
I want to talk about Luann. we have not seen Luann drunk in a while, right? Like, she has not been drunk on this show in a long time. And that's, but like, everyone else on this show has been for the last few seasons. We haven't seen this side of Luann in a while, and I do not love it. And I think it got a little out of hand with the conversation with Sonia, and it just went left really quickly, which things that can happen with alcohol. And that's happened a few times this season alone with alcohol and these women. But Luann turned really nasty. And I think this whole season, we've seen her be a little bit softer, a little bit kinder. She would, you know, run off with Tinsley and have those conversations with Tinsley when she was upset. She's been a little bit more of like a good friend, almost like she felt like she owes these women a lot because so many people were supportive of her in her sobriety journey. But you add a little alcohol to the mix and you bring up the cabaret and she just goes left and she goes in on Sonia in such a kind of cruel way.
You have made me feel that you don't appreciate it, and guess what? I don't want you in the show.
She doesn't need me.
I don't need you. I have my own cabaret show that's very huge, and guess what? You're not part of it. And I tried to include you, and you made me feel bad about it.
She didn't mean to do that.
Yes, she did.
I said I can't do it.
You're done. I don't want you in my show. How's that?
Luke,
you're done.
You do want me.
You're done.
Well, I mean, I think it is pretty crazy that we learn Sonia only gets paid $250 a show.
Yeah.
Which, she's right, that doesn't even cover the cost of the hair and makeup. And then for Luann to be like, I gave you an opportunity. Fucking opportunity. Give her money. Like, she is way more of a household name than these Broadway actors Luann's referring to. And I don't mean that in any sort of way against the caliber of celebrity that's in the show. I just mean that think about the people that are at home watching Real Housewives of New York. They don't live in New York necessarily. They don't know Broadway actors by name. They know Sonia Morgan. So really, she is bringing a certain name to Luann's show. And those are the people that are going to come to pay to see the show. People that are like, I want to see Sonia. I want to see Luann.
Yeah. Well, listen, you cannot bite the hand that feeds you. And Luann would not have a cabaret show if it weren't for the Real Housewives of New York City. And Real Housewives of New York City wouldn't really be what it is if it hadn't been for Sonia Morgan and her contributions over the last several years. You know, so it all kind of ties together. And to your point, people would be more inclined to come and be excited to see a show that involved not just Luann, but also Sonia. And she has been a part of the show before. So it's just a little bit like, sure, Luann, you do have this cabaret now. And I feel like she thinks that she's sort of surpassed the housewife. And now she's on a different level. She's a cabaret star. She has all of these shows now. But you got to remember, like, where you came from. And someone like Sonia brings a lot of value to your show.
And not only that, I just think it's so manipulative to be like, for you to even ask for money means that you're out of the show.
Yeah.
What? That is insane.
Well, yeah. I mean, nobody wants to volunteer to be a part of an event that's making money. It's not like this is a charity event and all of the proceeds are going towards something, some nonprofit. This is a show that the money gets, it's profit, you know? So why would Sonia just volunteer her time? She doesn't need that. She has her own businesses. She has her own things going on. She doesn't need to do this. She's doing it almost as a favor, but as a performer, she does have rights to get paid. And she's probably not like SAG-AFTRA, like some of these Broadway actors who, yeah, when they show up to this event, they have to be paid because they're protected in that, right? And they need to get paid for this kind of stuff. But as a courtesy to your friend, like, throw her some money.
Pay Sonia.
Yeah.
Pay her. She deserves it. Also, I want to know how much Luann's making.
I know. I wonder how that works, how much she ends up with, like, take home at the end of it all.
As I bet star. I bet it's more than $250.
Oh, definitely. Well, and after the whole throwdown between Lou and Sonia, we get Dorinda instigating again. And she starts,
I know.
Like, she just starts in on Sonia being like, she shouldn't talk to you this way. Like, you need to stand up for yourself. Don't be weak. We're strong women. Like, that's when it definitely, like, the alcohol hit everyone at once too hard. And I was like, oh boy. I was like, this is, everybody's just got to go to bed. Like, a few hours earlier, Sonia was like, let's order pizza and go to bed early. And I'm like, I wish that that had happened for you guys, because everything ended up really falling apart.
It's also like, I couldn't tell, like, I think I was as confused as Sonia is, like, Dorinda, are you trying to fire me up? Like, you're trying to be my coach, you know, like, you weak?
Right.
Yeah, you're weak, you know, or are you just being mean? Because I'm crying right now and you seem a little bit mean.
Yeah, it was all just a lot. And I was just sort of like, oh, I hope things just are better in the morning for everybody.
We shall see. I also got the chance to speak to Leah Diaz from Married to Menace in Los Angeles about her first season on the show, how her business is doing in these unprecedented times, and who she thinks needs a little bit of a wardrobe update. Here's that interview. So joining us via phone is Leah. How are you, Leah?
Oh, I'm well, doing as well as can be expected.
Are you still in self-quarantine? How are things in LA?
Well, I'm trying to get back to my regular routine, but it's hard because I have three kids and they're still at home, right? So we're trying to navigate me getting back to work, but still making sure that I have childcare. So it's just been, it's been different. It's been a little hectic, but it is what it is.
How many kids do you have and what are their ages?
Three. So my oldest just turned 16. I have my middle daughter, Kaylin, who is getting ready to turn 5 in a month. And then my little one, my son, Colin Jr., he is 3.
Oh, wow. So that's really, you really got your hands full.
Every day, all day, from sunup to sundown.
It was so nice that we got to meet your daughter on the show. And, you know, we got to see her make her first, you know, sort of lady appointment with Dr. Kendra.
Very gently. I appreciate that. Her lady.
I know. I'm like, what would you call that? Like, big girl seems condescending, but like, we'll go with lady for now.
I like it.
How nerve-wracking was that for you?
Well, you know what's funny is Kayla was like, this was nothing for her. She just thought of it as a doctor's appointment. And me, of course, being super paranoid, I'm like, oh my God, she's going to get on birth control and she's going to have all of these issues. And I just thought like worst case scenarios. But honestly, Kayla and Kendra made it so comfortable for me. Kayla actually went to go see Kendra a few weeks ago. That's like her new buddy and her doctor seriously now. So, you know, it's just interesting. As a parent, you like don't see your child as like, you know, an adult or like growing up. And that was the first time that I saw my little girl as like a young woman for the first time. So it was hard for me.
I can imagine. And all I could think about was how brave Kayla is to have that conversation filmed.
Yes. I mean, Kayla's a trooper and she's brave and she's just, I mean, honestly, I envy her. She didn't even flinch. She's like, okay, we're going to the gynecologist. No big deal. I'm like, you're not nervous about this? She's like, no, why would I be? So it was a breeze for her.
I mean, good for her, because if I were 15 and someone said vaginal discharge to me on camera, I might freak out.
Or pass out or need an ambulance, all of the above.
Even as a fully adult woman, I'm like, oh, God, no. Can we not?
Exactly. I feel your pain.
You know, revealed to us, the fans of the show, that you became a mom at a young age. What was that experience like for you?
What I didn't realize, because I was in the moment and I was in survival mode, I think that you look up and you realize like, wow, I don't really know what I like and what makes me happy and just career decisions. Like I made a career change 6 years ago. And I realized that, you know, when I had Kayla, I just kind of did things because I had to and not because I wanted to. For me being 19 and having to take care of a new baby, there was less time for me to figure out what Leah loved and what Leah liked and what made me feel fulfilled. So now that Kayla's older and I have a lot more support in my life, obviously, because I'm in a different situation, now it's time for me to kind of explore and figure out those things that I love. And that's where I am.
So what was that revelation you had 6 years ago? What is it that Leah loves and wants to do?
Well, I was a social worker for so long and I realized that I didn't like it. And honestly, I stopped being good at it. I think before I was good at it and it wasn't something that I loved, but I did it because it was a way for me to provide for Kayla and my family. And then one day it was no one thing. I just looked up one day and was like, you're not good at this job. And it's because you don't like it. For me, it was just having to do some soul searching and figuring out the things that I love. And then that's when I started my business, The Girl Cave LA, because I love hair and I love makeup and I love all of those things that come with, you know, transforming myself. And that's how I got into this business.
And it's quite a success, right? Aren't there multiple locations?
Yeah, we actually have 3 locations. I welcomed my first franchisee earlier this year, and we actually just signed on a new franchisee. We're going to be opening up a new location in Dallas later this year. So it is booming. It's doing well. I have a great team of people that work with me, and it's exciting. I love it. I love doing it every single day.
What do you attribute your success to?
I think the success is that, like I said, like I love it. So I work at it and it doesn't feel like work. Like I wake up in the morning and I'm creative and I see things that I want to change or things we want to do better. And because I own the stores, I just go in and I do it. And so I think just understanding what I like, what I love, understanding my customers, what they like and love, it just makes it easy for me to create a store experience that people can enjoy.
Well, on the subject of beauty, can I ask you about your Holy Grail beauty product?
Tell me. Let's talk about it. What you want to know? Skincare, makeup, what are we talking about?
Yeah, your skin is amazing. So I would love for you to walk me through your skincare routine.
You know what's funny is people tell me that I have great skin, but I don't. I have the most problematic skin. My skincare routine is getting a facial every week. I get a HydraFacial like clockwork. I even brought a machine that I have here at home because if I don't, you know, wearing makeup, I'm in the beauty industry. I wear makeup every day when I go into my stores. If I don't do that HydraFacial every week, you can tell. So yeah, it's really just making sure that I'm getting regular facials. And then I use organic skincare products because my skin is so sensitive. So I can't use a lot of like the basic, you know what I mean? Like over the counter things. I have to spend extra money and get the right products. So right now, I'm using this one brand called Eminence, and it's amazing. It's all organic. They have like a eucalyptus cleanser that I fell in love with. It's amazing. You got to try it.
Okay. It must be also a trial and error sort of situation in terms of doing makeup for on camera. Like, do you see yourself on Bravo now and you're like, oh, wait, got to change this, you know?
All the time. Not even just hair and makeup, just like an outfit. I don't know if you remember the infamous outfit I wore to Kendra's housewarming where my boob was out. And I look back and I'm like, this look really good at home. It does not look good on camera. You know, you don't see yourself on TV every day. You know what I mean? So just seeing yourself, it kind of just says, ooh, Leah, you probably shouldn't have worn that. Just on like full bras when you're on camera, not pasties or anything like that. So,
Well, I know that you have some strong fashion opinions. Who do you think has the best style out of everyone on Married to Medicine Los Angeles?
Okay. So I'm going to say myself, but other than me, I would say Britton is a close second. Britton puts it together. She's very fashionable.
Yeah. Who would you say has the worst style?
Ooh. Well, I won't say worse. It's just different. I think, and this is not shady, Jasmine's style is very like, she can wear anything. And I look at it and I'm like, girl, like you can actually put on clothes, right? Like you don't have to just wear a slip dress every time we go out. So yeah, I mean, she's a fitness buff. So of course she feels like she can wear everything, but I'm just like, girl, you can wear a full gown. You can wear a pantsuit. Like you don't have to wear a slip dress everywhere. So.
Right. Can wear everything. Shouldn't wear everything.
Right.
How nerve-wracking was it for you to come into this group?
I think that I was naive coming in, and I think I came in thinking that everyone was going to love me, and I quickly realized shortly into it that that's not the case. So I think that I came in, you know, with great intentions, super hopeful, and then I kind of got hit with a ton of bricks. And yet, after I got hit with those bricks, then it became nerve-wracking. Like, oh my God, how can you not like me? Like, I'm so fun. I'm so great. And then I turned into this shady person who was talking about Kendra behind her back.
Yeah. I mean, that's so funny. Did you watch Married to Medicine or Married to Medicine LA before you came onto the show?
I definitely did because Imani is my friend. And yeah. So I watched every week because I love to see her. I loved her story last year with her trying to reconnect with her father and then meeting her sister. Like, I really was connected to what she was showing on the show. And yeah, I watch every week.
Amazing. Well, I always wonder for people who it's their first season coming into a show that already exists, if it feels a little bit like, you know, getting hazed by a sorority.
Oh, definitely.
Like, really?
It definitely felt like a hazing. And not so much from the doctors, from the wives. It definitely felt like I was being tested to see, like, okay, is she really the strong businesswoman? Like, you know, because I come off as somebody who has it put together. I felt like I was being tested every day to see if I really was who I, you know, who I think that I am and who I say that I am. I mean, you put it nicely, honestly. I'm thinking of a better way to put it, but we'll go ahead. We'll go with that for now, but it definitely felt stronger than that.
Wow. Who was maybe the hardest on you?
Definitely Shanice. And I don't think that she would say any different. She was hard on me in the beginning.
Yeah. I wonder if, you know, next season you're hard on the newcomer.
No, let me tell you. After you go through this, being hard on the newcomer, I would have to be the worst person in the world to not any new person coming into this because I went through it. I went through it. These ladies put me through it. So, I mean, I'm just grateful that I came in friends with Imani because I always had somebody that I could confide in and somebody who I trusted through this process. So for me, it was hard, but it was easier having her. I think that if I didn't have her through this process, it wouldn't have been as easy for me to work through it.
Yeah. How was it, you know, sort of going through this season with her? I mean, I know that we've gotten a glimpse at, you know, sort of the relationship issue she's going to be facing. But for you as a friend, how was that?
I mean, honestly, it was hard for me to see because I know how much she values her relationships. And I mean, marriage, yes, but just also her friendships. And I feel like when you're home, your marriage is kind of rocky. It's hard for you to be present in other places. And so it was hard for me to watch her kind of navigate that. But I always say that Imani is a super strong person. So if anybody could handle it, she would be the person to be able to figure it out. But it was really hard to watch because she loves hard, right? It takes a lot to break that shell. But once you're in, like her husband, like our friend group, it was just hard to see her kind of be shunned. I mean, there's no other way to put it. She was asking for love. She was asking for these things, and to see her kind of feel shunned and rejected, it was hurtful for me to watch.
Yeah, I can't imagine. You're on a Bravo show. That has to feel amazing. What has been, if anything, maybe like an unexpected perk that's come out of this so far?
Well, you know what's funny is we haven't been able to go out much because everything is closed, but I guess I'm so naive. I'm in my stores and people recognize me the entire time that I'm there. Like yesterday I was in the store and I was just doing some inventory in the back, kind of dressed down with the hoodie on, just trying to get in and out. And I hear this lady screaming and I'm like, why is this lady screaming? She's like, oh my God, you're the lady from Married to Medicine. And I have no makeup on. I have my hair in the crazy ponytail and I have on sweats. And I'm like, okay, so you definitely have to take pictures with this lady. But I'm like, ma'am, please put a filter on this so I don't look as horrible as I look right now on camera.
Oh, yeah. No, it's starting. You're going to have to look perfect every day now.
Well, especially in my stores. So I think the connection between me and the Girl Cave LA is, you know, it's really easy for people to find out and figure out. And so when they see me in the location, they're like, oh my God, that's her. And it doesn't, I mean, help that I'm almost 6 feet tall too. So
right.
I don't really blend in anywhere. So
you're easy to spot.
Yeah, exactly. So that has been unexpected, but it's been great because a lot of times I'm rushing in and out of my stores trying to do so many things, but it forces me to connect with my customers and it feels good. I love it.
Well, I can't wait to see how they sort of evolve once, you know, the world opens back up, because obviously a lot of people on our shows have seen success with their personal businesses. So I'm excited to see yours boom even more.
Yes. Well, from your lips to God's ears.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you so much for doing this phone call. I know you have a lot going on, but we appreciate it.
No, thank you. Kayla is actually babysitting for me right now so I can have some peace and quiet to do this.
Oh, he's the best.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, how did I look out like this? I got like the best 16-year-old daughter. I'm like, hopefully nothing crazy comes out. But she's like, she's so good. She's really an awesome kid. So I'm grateful.
Yeah. Okay, Below Deck Med?
Yes.
Okay, so these charter guests, they remind me of a group of people that you get into a fight with in a Las Vegas club. Do you know what I mean?
I feel like how many times have you gotten in a fight in a Las Vegas club to even have that enter your mind?
I mean, enough times. Like the very first time I went to Vegas, the very first time I went was for a friend's birthday. There was like a group of us and we went to see like Genuine perform, which he
did. Oh my God.
Yeah. And he did like Pony like three times because, you know,
obviously. I was like, well, of course he did, but three times is amazing.
But I remember us getting into an argument with the people next to us because there was some kind of barrier and whatever. And it was just like a group of these people who you just know that they get too rowdy. They do probably have a lot of money that they're spending that weekend and they feel a little bit more entitled to the space than everyone else. And of course, these charter guests are paying to be a part of this experience in a different way than it would be to run into somebody in a club. But just like that one guy who was like a dick about the oysters. And then I think he was the one talking about like hooking up with a girl while he was like driving a Ferrari or some shit. And I was like, you are the kind of person who goes to Vegas to show off and like makes other people who are just there to have a good time like angry because you're arrogant, you know? Like, oh, I just like these guests were just the worst.
Also, I mean, not to skip ahead too far, and also to borrow a phrase from Bethany Frankel, but they just were all show and no go. Like wimpy ass tip they left, you know?
I know.
We got $17,000 and we're getting $1,277 per person.
This package looks small.
Oh my God. And then they had the nerve to ask for snacks after Chef Kiko pulled off this like 72 plate dinner with like extra people that he wasn't planning for. Everything was so timed. The crew absolutely crushed it. They did such a great job. I was like so happy for them. Thank goodness for Bugsy because she really stepped it up. And this charter would not have survived without a second stew. There's no question. But as soon as that dinner was over and they're like continuing to party and then they're like, can we have some snacks?
Can we have it's some like, cup of noodles?
Right. Like, no, like you cannot. Like we'll order you a pizza maybe, but like, that is it. There's no more for you guys. And then, like you said, that dinky little tip that they left, come on.
Come on.
The only good part of that whole charter guest experience was Scout the dog.
Love Scout. I bet he's not douchey at all.
Scout?
Yeah, I bet he's just grateful. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, even the primary charter guest didn't seem as bad.
Yeah, he didn't seem too terrible.
No, all he cared about the whole time was how his dog was doing and like videos of his dog from the babysitter, or the dog sitter, I should say. You know, he seemed like the least offensive out of all of them.
Gross. They're just gross.
Did you actually notice when they sat down, I think it was for the tip meeting, Hannah was playing with her necklace?
No.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, I can't help it.
And that, and what Kate said, was that mean she's nervous? That's her.
Yeah. Which I, you know, at the tip meeting, maybe she was wondering, will there be any critiques from Captain Sandy or will this tip not be as big as we were thinking? But I did notice she played with her necklace for a moment. And I was like, oh, she's nervous about something.
The one thing that like, I just couldn't stop noticing, I don't think anyone could, is just how gross Pete is this whole episode. And I wanted to ask you as a male, because like I just feel like you having, you know, maybe more guy friends, more, do you just think that there are some people that are bad at picking up on signals from people, or that they actually think they have the ability to wear a person down?
I think it's the latter more than anything. And I think it comes from this place of, you know, honestly, white male privilege, where you feel like you can get away with saying things or doing things or behaving in a certain way and not suffering consequences. Because, you know, I mean, think about it from like when you're growing up and you're like a kid and you've heard so many times, boys will be boys, you know, like there's just sort of this blanket excuse for certain types of behavior. And that's changing now. I mean, definitely with the Me Too movement and everything that we've seen happening in the last couple of years, there's been a significant shift in that culture. But, you know, I think someone like Pete has never really been put in his place, and he just refuses to learn from it. I mean, how many conversations has Malia had with him? Like, don't call me sweetheart. You sound arrogant. Like, stop saying this. Like, don't talk to people this way.
Yeah.
And then the things that he was saying to Bugsy and just watching her reaction of like, are you serious? Like, is that, are you really saying that? Then it becomes almost this like, he wants to see how far he can get or like what he can get away with. But it's just, it's shocking too, because there are cameras there, you know, like he's a dad. Like, you just wonder how, you wonder how these things don't click in his brain of like, well, maybe I should be a little bit more respectful because I am trying to set an example for my son, or I'm on a TV show now. Maybe I should think about what my image is going to look like. But, you know, there he just has probably never been challenged in a proper way. What I really love actually about this casting is with Alex being kind of a major contrast to Pete. And we see it in the conversations that he has with Bugsy in this episode. He's like, well, if he says anything out of line, let me know. We see Alex being like really respectful to her at the end when he's like, can I kiss you on the head? Like, he's so wasted. But he's sort of checking in with her at every step of the way. Like, is this okay? Like, do you want me to do that? Like, and I think he is a perfect example of how, you know, straight white men should approach situations, not just with women, but with everybody. Like, think about the room that you're in and the people that you're in front of. And, you know, it just, it's, he really is. I didn't think Pete was going to get worse, and he did.
It's just, I can't relate, because the thing is, I only want someone who wants me. If I ever get even an inkling, which, I mean, look, it hasn't happened yet, but if I were to ever get an inkling that someone wasn't into me, I would be so quick to back off, because I don't want to have to wear anyone down. And the fact that he sees her like shuddering when he touches her, it's like, how does that make you want to try harder and be even more gross and annoying?
Right. Stick with your girl, Lara, that you're still in touch with for whatever reason.
What are you doing, Lara? Have you looked in the mirror? You're beautiful. What are you doing?
I mean, look, the two of them can have each other as far as I'm concerned.
I also, I have never rolled my eyes so hard as at the end when he's talking to Bugsy. First of all, that whole conversation with Bugsy when he's being disgusting, talking about sleeping with stewardesses on yachts, like gross.
Yeah.
But then he said,
by the way, they call me Shameless Pete.
I guarantee you no one except for him has called him Party Pete.
100%. And what's really tragic about the whole thing is that's not even that creative. You know,
it's so true.
Like, come on. Like, I love alliteration. I use it all the time in our copywriting and all sorts of things that we do for work and all day long. Alliteration sounds nice. It is just the way our minds and our ears work. We think alliteration sounds nice, but it's not even that creative. Like, think about Mike, the situation from Jersey Shore. Like, the situation was at least an arrogant nickname, but a creative one, you know, like, right. Oh, we got a situation. And it was playful, and it was like a little bit more interesting.
It just made me think of, even, I don't know if you watch The Office, but even like Michael Scott is like, I'm Prison Mike. Like, it's just,
right.
It's just this most simple, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, no, I mean, Pete is the only person who thinks he's as cool as he isn't. You know, it's just like, I'm really looking forward to the editing of him out of the show.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
Can we talk about the night out?
Yes. Oh my God, because we have to talk about Bugsy's outfit.
Yes.
Okay. Here was my thinking the whole time. And look, as I said, I paid more attention to the outfits just based on like all the things that Kate like has a lot of opinions about what people wear. I just wonder, what event was Bugsy going to that night? Because it certainly wasn't the same event as everyone else.
Yeah, no, I don't know. And I don't have a problem with bold accessories, I think.
Exactly,
like,
yes.
I love an outfit, like a simple outfit with like a bold earring. That's great. But if you're doing a whole bunch of stuff on the dress, like pattern, frill, whatever, and then you've got these
sequin.
Yeah, and then you have these statement earrings, and then you add in some like statement hair clips. it's just like, I don't know where to look, you know? I'm like, what am I supposed to be paying attention to?
Is it New Year's Eve? I don't exactly know what time frame we're working with, but I don't feel like anyone else was dressed for that occasion.
No, I mean, it was a regular night out for these guys, you know? I mean, it was her first night out, so maybe she wanted to, like, make a statement, and she certainly did, but it's probably not the right statement.
Yeah.
I want to talk a little bit about, too, how when they were sitting down, you know, I like I mentioned, I love the conversation with, like, Alex and Bugsy and that sort of flirtation I was really into. But I was a little bit weirded out by Hannah going right for Rob in front of not just Jess, but everybody being like, well, don't you have a girlfriend?
And like you and your girlfriend just have like an open relationship?
I'm my girlfriend.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like if that is something she is so concerned about and concerned because she cares about Jess and doesn't want to see her get fucked over, then that's one thing. But it seemed a little shady and seemed like she wanted to kind of start a little bit of shit.
And also, it also seems like she was hoping to get something that she didn't get because he's like, well, yeah, I did, but I ended it. You know.
Right, right. And, you know, she had already brought up the Instagram story he posted to Jess. So, you know, if she really had a concern, a question that she wanted to ask, maybe wait until you're at the club when it's really loud, everyone's out, everyone's having a good time, and you can sort of take Rob to the side and be like, hey, just want to check in. You know, what's the deal with you and your girlfriend? Because I know things are happening with you and Jess. I just felt like it wasn't called for at that moment.
Yeah, I get that.
Also, can we talk about what Rob said about his sobriety?
Oh my God. I was like, my heart. I love him.
What's wrong?
I'm 10 years sober today.
What do you mean?
From NA.
What's that?
Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah.
What's narcotics?
Old, but I'm really happy.
I mean, it was so profound and so poignant and just, I think, a perspective I had never heard when I've heard people talk about their journey into sobriety or dealing with the loss of a parent or someone that they love to addiction or whatever. Like, I did not see that coming. I mean, we knew that he had lost his mom and that there were some issues with, you know, drugs and sobriety in his past or whatever. But the way he explained it and the way he got so emotional in the interview, like, I was really like, oh my God, like, this is such a deep experience that he's had. Like, I can't even imagine going through that.
I know.
Now I just want him to have like really great sex with Jess on this journey.
Yeah, I mean, they deserve, like, it's two hot people. They sort of owe it to us, you know?
But all they're doing is cuddling in those tiny ass beds. Like, what? Why would anyone want to just cuddle?
It's like God didn't give you those bodies to cuddle with, okay?
Right. Just like get in some work. Even my question is too, like, Chef Kiko was still on the top bunk while Rob and Jess were on the bottom. And I appreciate Kiko being like, yo, you guys want to do something? It's fine. Love is love. Like, I'm good. But but then they're just cuddling. I'm like, is that really comfortable for either one of you? Are you getting a good night's sleep in this tiny, tiny bed? Like, if you're not going to do anything, just like go sleep in your own beds comfortably. Like, I don't know.
Are you not a cuddler, Eric?
I get really hot. I get really hot when I sleep.
You're like, Danny can have 2 minutes and then it's to his side of the bed.
It's true. Like, like right before you're ready to go to sleep, you know, that's fine. Or in the morning, whatever. But I mean, we sleep with like the air conditioner on, you know, medium 68 degrees. We crank that on like an hour before we go to bed because it just, I have to be cool. My body just like functions at a higher temperature.
I am so annoying because I will be straight up offended if I wake up in the middle of the night and the person is on the other side of the bed. I'm just like,
oh my God, really?
Yes. I'm like, no. I want full body contact the whole time.
Okay, wait, what size bed do you sleep in? Is it a full or a queen?
Queen.
It's a queen. Okay, so I'm pretty sure we have a full because, because we just, you know, we had separate
mattresses. Well, then how are you not cuddling anyway? I mean, you're basically, you have no choice.
I mean, when I was sleeping alone, I would always, I would starfish, you know, I would just spread out, like take up, I would sleep in the middle and take up the whole thing. And, you know, now we have talked many times about at some point upgrading to a king size bed. And like, I would go as far as getting a California king. Like, I'm not messing around.
Holy shit, Eric.
I mean, there's no room for that in this New York City apartment. You know,
I was going to say, are they paying you more for this podcast than they are me?
But like, in an ideal world, like that would be right, what I wanted. Because, you know, and I think if we upgraded to a queen, it would help us a little bit. But it's just my tendency is to just like turn and spread and like spread out. And I just like, I need a little bit more room.
Mm, well,
we also, this is probably weird. And I don't think I've ever mentioned this to you, but we sleep with a different set of covers.
Oh, why?
Yeah. It's just like another part of our sleeping habits, I think, or more so mine. But like Danny sleeps with like the comforter, and then I sleep with a sheet and like a quilt that I bought a while ago. And so we have like, when we make the bed, we make it like all together, like it looks normal. But when we sleep at night, sometimes we'll sleep under the same comforter, like once in a while. But oftentimes I just like pull together my own set of blankets and I'm like, okay, you do you over there. I'll do me over here.
That's so funny.
I don't know if that's like normal. I've never really heard of anyone else doing that. So if you guys out there, anyone else sleeps with separate covers, but in the same bed as your partner, please let me know that I'm not the only one. Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, let's do Rose and Thorn.
Okay, what was your rose?
So my rose was from Real Housewives of New York, and it was Dorinda coaching her housekeeper on how to not be so nice to Ramona. And she's like, we're going to role play. And like, just the housekeeper was like, oh, okay, I'll get you your Pinot Noir. She's like, no!
In fact, I want to practice. I'm Ramona. Len?
Yes, Miss Ramona.
Can you please bring me a glass of Pinot Noir?
Yes, Miss Ramona.
No!
What did I do? She's not doing anything. What will I do, Miss Ramona?
Let's try again. Can you please bring me a glass of Pinot Noir?
Oh, Miss Ramona, with due respect, this is not a hotel. There's no room service. If you want some wine, go downstairs.
Correct.
Okay.
It's so true. I mean, you should never go to someone's house and expect, if they have a staff, that they should be there to wait on you. Like, that's not their job. Come on.
It's true. What was your rose?
My rose is from Married to Medicine Los Angeles, and it is Dr. Britton coming prepared to the drag show with that stack of dollar bills. Because if you remember, my thorn last season on Real Housewives of Orange County in one of our episodes was them being like, what do we do here? Like, they had no idea, which at this point, I now know Bronwyn is all up to date on her drag shows and how they work because of her son, Jacob. So I know that she knows what to do now. But I was like, yes, Britton came with a stack of cash. I'm happy that she did that. But my second part of that rose is also Imani calling drag shows a theme park for your eyeballs, because it's perfect. I mean, it's exactly how you feel when you watch a drag performance.
Well, and if I could add on to your rose, also Leah calling it a slut walk and be like, wait, no, that's not right. Catwalk.
Oh my
catwalk.
God.
Taking over the whole room, doing the slut walk. What do you call it? Not the slut walk. Oh my God, why did I call it a slut walk?
Yeah, I mean, where did that come from? She was like, I have no idea where that would have come from. Like, is that from a movie or something that I just...
I don't know, but I want to call it a slut walk from now on.
I think we should. I think that's much better. What was your thorn?
Okay, well, I have two. The first one's dark. Second one's lighter.
Okay.
But just Kyle on Real Housewives of Beverly Hills talking about how her mom, you know, she wishes her mom had had sort of this stoic stance on death, because it would have made it easier for her, but instead, like, till the very end was telling Kyle, like, I am terrified to die. I just feel like that puts such a burden on the people around you. And, you know, obviously you never know how you're going to handle something like that, but it really, to me, put a lot of light on Kyle's anxieties. You know, because as viewers, it can get a little overbearing. Like, everything makes her anxious. She's fearful of everything. But I feel like if you watched your mom die of cancer and the whole time she was telling you how very scared she was of it, like, that would really shape how you looked at the world.
Oh, God. Yeah, 100%. You know, it is really interesting to hear about Kyle and Kim and Kathy's mom and how complex of a character she was.
Yeah.
But you really, like, to your point, you can see it in the way that Kim behaves, in Kyle's anxieties. We don't know Kathy quite as well, but I'm sure that there are a lot of characteristics there as well.
Yeah. My other thorn was from Married to Medicine Los Angeles, and it was the morning after the drag show. Kendra saying that she was doing her little pre-shower dance and money came out.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't tell if she was saying it came out from her vagina.
I think that's what she was saying, but...
Because if that's true, that's just a yeast infection waiting to happen.
Oh, my God.
You don't know where that money's been. Like, so many hands have touched that money, you know?
Oh, my God. Money is so, so dirty. I wash my hands after touching money all the time. I mean, I wash my hands all... I always wash my hands, number one. Number two...
You're, like, just putting that out there. I'm very clean.
Yeah. Number two, coronavirus. Yes, washing my hands even more. But even when we, like, do laundry here and use quarters... Like, I am washing my hands in between every time of touching those quarters.
Ugh, yeah, change is so gross.
Sick.
All right, what was your thorn?
Well, my thorn is that Tinsley left before this Berkshire's trip because I think her energy would have helped in this whole situation, especially how it sort of devolved at the end with, you know, the fight between Luann and Sonia. Because at least from a viewer standpoint, Tinsley is always a little bit lighter and can make light out of so many situations. And it just felt so ugly right at the end there of this episode. So I feel like if she had been there, she and Leah probably would have gotten into some antics and it would have maybe helped the situation a bit. And, you know, I do miss Tinsley.
I know, you love her so much.
I do. All right, well, we'll be back with an all new episode next Saturday. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
And remember, watching Bravo isn't a guilty pleasure.
It's self-care.
Guys, let's keep the conversation going. We want to talk to you all week long. You can find us on Instagram at Bravo Daily Dish.
And on Twitter at Bravo TV. Just don't forget to use the hashtag Bravo Daily Dish.
Or reach out to us personally. I'm everywhere at Meg Segura.
And I'm everywhere at Eric J. Mack. That's E-R-I-K.
And if you're on Facebook, join the Daily Dish Facebook group.
You can post about what you're watching, your favorite shows, who's your favorite housewife, ask a question, start some drama. There's a lot of good stuff in there, so check it out.
You can also learn more about the podcast at bravotv.com.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Looking fine, and I got my girls with me. With the boys
at the table getting tipsy, miss me, kiss me one more time. Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.